Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is my privilege this evening to introduce to you Bharat Vithal Bhai Patel, who is a friend of long standing, though I must hasten to add that that is not the sole reason why he has been invited to give this lecture. Bharat was born in 1944 and had his schooling in the Sindhya School in Gwalior, going on to an honors degree in economics in the MS University in Baroda. Thereafter, he took an MA in economics at the University of Notre Dame and an MBA in marketing from the University of Michigan, both in the United States. To divert a little bit, when my daughter was a 2 or 3 year old toddler, Bharat rejoiced in teasing her by calling her Batliwali, because as you know, our family name is Batliwala. In reply, she would call him Vix Vaporabwala. This pseudonym actually suited him better than most realized, because Bharat is that rare phenomenon among modern management professionals who has actually spent his entire career in one basic core company, though it has changed hands through mergers and so on over the years. He in fact joined Vix International in 1969 when he graduated with his MBA and steadily rose through the marketing ranks after the company was transferred to Richardson Hindustan to eventually become the Vice President of Marketing in 1981. When Richardson Vix merged with Procter & Gamble in 1985, he became Associate General Manager of Procter & Gamble India, responsible for the company's marketing, sales, exports, manufacturing, and purchase functions. Between 1988 and 1990, he spent 2 years with Procter & Gamble in the United Kingdom as category manager and as country manager, Republic of Ireland. He returned to Procter & Gamble India as executive vice president in 1990, and in 1994 was appointed Chairman and Managing Director of Procter & Gamble India Limited, a highly successful multinational company known for its innovations and responsiveness to the Indian market. Apart from this prestigious position, Bharat is also a member of several associations and bodies, and I would mention in particular that he is a member of the Board of Governors of the Advertising Standards Council of India, Bombay, and also chairman of the managing committee of the Indian Society of Advertisers, Bombay. Bharat is a keen golfer and mad about cricket. I can vouch for the fact that it's quite dangerous to sit next to him while watching a cricket match when India is losing. It'll surprise you to know, ladies and gentlemen, that this marketing legend and highly successful corporate leader is actually a little anxious about his presentation this evening. Perhaps this is because the stereotype of the marketing man that we all have is that of a glib talker. Bharat is not a talker, but a doer. His hallmark is action, not speech. So what you will hear from him today is not an erudite academic analysis that emerges from management schools, but a view from the trenches, from a man who has successfully led his troops in an MNC that has lasted the course both before and after liberalization. So without further ado, may I invite Bharat to make his presentation.
Thank you, Srilata, for giving me an opportunity to talk of my and my company's experiences to such a distinguished audience. Ladies and gentlemen, the subject given to me for this evening's talk is experiences of multinational companies in India, pre- and post-liberalization, and not problems of multinational companies in India, as was reported in today's newspapers. In fact, as you will see, I have more good things to talk about liberalization as it affects multinational companies than complain about it. I told Dr. Sarukai that I will not be conducting any research among multinational companies, and then present a paper on the subject, as would be expected if one was teaching a course, which this is. What I said I will talk about is my own experiences on what the situation was pre-liberalization and how things have changed since liberalization gained momentum over the past 5 to 6 years. As this talk is based on my own experiences and perceptions, sometimes I may not be very accurate on data or terminologies. I would appreciate your feedback on where I may have quoted wrong or understood things wrongly in the question and answer session which will follow. The speech part of my talk would not be too long because I am looking forward to interaction with all of you in the question and answer session. It is important to know at the very beginning that just as beauty is to the beholder, liberalization is perceived differently by different people in my company. For old India hand like me, who have seen the draconian constraints on business in general and on multinational companies in particular in the past, the current liberalization is wonderful and has made real and positive differences in ways and type of businesses multinational companies do in India. To others, especially the foreign expatriates who work with me, India is still a very difficult country to do business in. Let me illustrate this with an incident which happened at PNG headquarters in Cincinnati recently. I had gone to Cincinnati in November for our annual meetings where the general managers of all the PNG subsidiaries gather and meet the top management of the company. We call this the operations committee meeting. This year we had for the first time an outsider addressing the operations committee. He was Roberto Goizuta, chairman of Coca-Cola. In the question and answer session after the talk, responding to a question on which countries Coke is focusing on, Roberto Goizuta turned around and told the PNG chairman, John Pepper, who was sitting on the stage at the same time, he just turned around and said, "Isn't India and Germany very difficult countries to do business in?" For me, this little sentence was a big setback. We have been working very hard to convince Procter & Gamble's top management to invest in India and put India on its priority list along with China, southern part of Latin America and Eastern Europe. I had to do a lot of explaining to our top management to undo the damage done by Roberto by this one sentence. Mind you, Roberto Goizuta did not seem to have anything against the Indians. In fact, he showed us the Indian this Masta Kalandar, some of you may have seen the advertising, as the best Coca-Cola advertising going around this time in the world. So he loved that Indian culture. It just thought that, you know, this was such a difficult country to do business in. 2 points I want to make through this story. One, many people still continue to think that liberalization in India is only skin deep. Second, multinationals are not lined up to come and invest in India. One has to work very hard to convince multinationals to invest in India. Back to my personal experience on liberalization. I would like to break the pre- and post-liberalization effects on multinationals discussion in 5 general segments. These are FERA, Foreign Exchange Regulation Act, IDRA, which is the Industrial Regulation Act, import controls, duties and taxes, and availability of services. Let me take FERA first. FERA was meant to cover regulations on foreign exchange, but was extended to cover foreign ownership. Any company which had more than 40% foreign equity was considered a FERA company and not an Indian company. And a FERA company was not permitted to grow beyond licensed products and production capacities. Even to build a warehouse, a FERA company had to get an RBI permission. Most of the companies, including our parent company, which was then Richardson Wicks, decided to reduce foreign equity to 40%. The diluted portion of equity was sold to mainly financial institutions at virtually throwaway price fixed by the controller of capital. No multinational company likes to have less than 100% ownership in their subsidiaries if they don't require outside support. Multinationals have deep pockets compared to what is required for investment in India, So it is not money which drives them to have local equity. The reason some multinational company has local equity is A, if law requires it, B, if a local partner can help get over local hurdles, and C, if a local partner can add value, such as providing an existing production, brand, or distribution base. Procter & Gamble, for example, has local partners in few countries like China and Saudi Arabia, where doing business on own would have been difficult, if not impossible. In Vietnam and some other East European countries, Procter & Gamble has joint venture with some existing manufacturers, similar to what we had in India with Godrej Soaps. In no other country except United States and India, Procter & Gamble has the general public as shareholders. Procter & Gamble has no need to go to outside investors for funding its investment requirements, and therefore no inclination to share the profits, if any, on its investments. Pre-liberalization, 60% of profits of Procter & Gamble India were going out to a non-Procter & Gamble shareholders. Another constraint of FERA pre-liberalization was problem of paying technical fees and royalties. Technical fees and royalties were not permitted for consumer products because they were, and even today, are considered low technology. This was clear case of free ride by Procter & Gamble India and its local shareholders. Let me explain. Procter & Gamble worldwide spends over $1 billion per year on research and development alone. They also provide expert support on marketing, management systems, technical services, formal training modules, etc. to all its subsidiaries. But when technical fees and royalties are excluded, then Procter & Gamble gets the same return as local shareholders who neither provide technologies nor management expertise. In every annual general meeting of ours, I get a shareholder question on why we are paying royalties to Procter & Gamble. And my answer always is, please don't grudge these royalties. In return, you are getting billions of dollars worth of research and management expertise. This is the best deal you have, and the company results show it. Another pre-liberalization FERA related issue we had was problems in going abroad for training and meetings. I'm sure everybody knows about these things. It took weeks to get RBI permission for the visit, and per diem amount sanctioned for senior most managers was niggardly. Getting foreign travel permits for junior or non-technical people was virtually impossible. Now all these FERA related problems are gone. Government has got list of priority industries where foreign holding for a new company can go up to 51% automatically. Government has even permitted most of the existing multinationals to increase foreign equity to at least 51%. Procter & Gamble India, whose foreign equity was reduced to 40% in 1982, took up the Procter & Gamble equity back to 51% in 1992 and to 65% in 1993. Procter & Gamble was also permitted to open a new 100% foreign-owned subsidiary in 1993. We now get automatic permission from RBI to pay technical service fees or royalties for new technology or a new product. For foreign travel, no permits are required, and the per diem money allotted for expenses makes us not beg our other PNG's counterparts to take us out to dinner anymore. That's what we had to do before. FERA has become much friendlier, although from what I read in papers, post the recent problems faced by ITC, FERA needs further revision so practical difficulties faced by importers, exporters, and Indian companies investing abroad are removed. The biggest and clearly the most beneficial liberalization for local and multinational companies alike is in the IDRA, or the Industrial Development and Regulation Act. People have forgotten that not many years ago, one had to get an industrial license from Delhi for setting up a new industrial activity which was not in small scale. One had to be in Delhi all the time, filling forms with 7 copies, meeting bureaucrats and politicians in different ministries to start an industrial enterprise. After wasting months, if not years, one would get an industrial license which indicated more of what should not be done instead of what is permitted to be done. The license would say something like, foreign brand name would not be allowed. More than such and such output should not be produced. Such and such value of export has to be done. Plant will have to be in some godforsaken backward area, etc. All these crazy constraints have gone now with virtual scrapping of the industrial licensing requirement. I give more credit to liberalization in IDRA for easily getting seats on airlines to and from Delhi than to privatization of airlines now. Now, there is no reason for any businessman to go to Delhi unless he wants to get into the still controlled sectors like telecom or power. Making IDRA harmless is the main reason for the double-digit growth per annum we are getting in industrial production ever since the liberalization process began. With the liberalization, another act of the government which has become irrelevant is the MRTP Act from the monopoly perspective. Earlier, FERA was used to control the foreign equity companies and MRTP was used to control the large Indian groups. I personally believe while scrapping of the controls on large businesses via MRTP companies is a good thing and has unleashed the big Indian business houses in all sorts of industrial and service activities, making MRTP Act toothless on the monopoly front is not so beneficial for consumers. If companies are permitted to gain controlling share of market via merger and acquisitions. Currently, I believe a company in India can control total market for a product category via merger and acquisitions, which I don't think would be permitted either in a European community or USA. This is clearly not good for consumers at least. Question then arises that if IDRA and MRTP, which used to constrain the industrial growth, are virtually scrapped, then why has India not become one of the Asian tigers? I have no clear answer for that, although I have a lot of hypotheses. One continuing problem which we most often hear is poor infrastructure like ports, roads, power availability, and worse, nothing practical is being done to fix it. DPCO or Drug Price Control Order is one factor why multinational drug companies are still pulling out of India. Small-scale reservation in products such as toys, shoes, sanitary napkins, confectionery, zippers, the like is another constraint which is holding back getting improved technology, higher market growth and booming exports. Procter & Gamble, for example, is constrained in bringing the best quality sanitary napkin for our Whisper brand because of the small-scale reservation. We have to get it made outside using low-cost and not world-class equipment. Yes, we don't have to go to Delhi anymore to get industrial license, but try setting up a factory at a local level. We have just set up a couple of new factories and believe me, our experience in getting land, permission to build, start the production from state and local bodies, getting power, getting factory inspection done, etc., has been terrible. It has taken at least a year more for us to complete the plant from start to finish. One constraint we as an American multinational company face in India in getting things done at a local level is the FCPA. FCPA stands for Foreign Corrupt Practices Act of the USA. This act makes the parent company in US responsible for a bribe given by a subsidiary anywhere in the world. If I condone or give bribes in India, senior officers of my parent company in the US are liable for prosecution in US. Every single manager in PNG India has to give in writing once a year that we have not indulged in greasing the palms directly or indirectly. I don't say that we are stopped from building plants or doing legitimate things because we don't pay the speed money at the local level. It is just that it makes much more time and hassle than for others who may be paying. Loosening of import controls is one area where our company has benefited too. Pre-liberalization, even capital goods for consumer product industry were not allowed to be imported. Imports of most raw materials were permitted under license, which was difficult to get for consumer products. Imports of packaging material is still restricted because government perhaps thinks that packaging does not add value and whatever quality we get locally should be acceptable. You will appreciate that multinational companies in consumer products want to make only standard products using qualified materials, processes and equipments. Qualification of materials, processes and equipments to get world-class standard products is not an easy task. One cannot use local materials and equipment and come out with world-class products overnight. It requires painstaking work from R&D, quality assurance, engineering and buying people to localize materials and equipment to manufacture world-class products. Right now, virtually all raw material and capital goods have come under OGL, meaning no license required for imports. But I remember before liberalization, we were not allowed to import a manufacturing line for making a simple product like cough drops, and we had to build a line out of some local, some imported spares. That line never worked with full efficiency. The output per man hour was low, there was a lot of wastages and scrap generated, but we had to live with it. On the other hand, the manufacturing processes of products like Ariel detergent and Pantene shampoo we are making post-liberalization are on equipment which are proven and qualified. We have been able to make the same quality of Ariel detergent or Pantene as available elsewhere in the world because the key ingredients like enzymes we put in Ariel or silicone conditioners we have in Pantene are imported. We are able to source most of the key ingredients in India itself in the long run. We could have never been able to make superior performing products like Ariel, Whisper or Pantene but for import liberalization. And the Indian consumers would have been the loser. Minor irritants on imports still continue, like packaging material import is still kept in restricted list for some dogmatic reason which I do not understand. The only main category which is import restricted now is consumer products. While from business point of view, multinational companies which are already in, like ours, would be interested in keeping imports of consumer products out, I personally believe that imports of consumer products will make us improve quality and value of our products further. It is clear that not allowing imports of consumer products now does not make any sense. With import duties of 50% and plus, I don't think the Indian consumer will go on a shopping spree of imported products. Look at how high-priced upmarket products like Mercedes cars and Scotch whiskey have failed to generate the expected demand because of its high prices. The other day I read in the month of November only 20 or 30, maybe the telco people here know better, 30 Mercedes cars were sold in November. And I read somewhere that Scotch whiskey marketers had estimated to sell about 1 lakh a case, 1 lakh cases a month in India, but barely 10,000 cases are sold currently. Government should free imports of consumer products. My guess is that you will see that imports will not drain India's foreign exchange, but help improve quality of Indian-made products. Effect of liberalization on taxes and duties have been mixed. Yes, the individual tax rate has been brought down to 40% from the absurd 90% plus rate from the heydays of the socialism. Yes, the excise duty on cosmetics and toiletries has been reduced from Charan Singh's 110% to 40% now. There was no way P&G could have launched Pantene shampoo at 110% excise duty. Yes, the cascading effect of excise duty has been reduced with the introduction of mod VAT. And yes, the maximum import duty has come down to 52% from the absurd 150% plus import duty of the past. But you will be surprised to know that nearly 40% of the price the consumer pays on our Ariel detergent goes to the government in taxes and duties. I haven't calculated this one, but I'm sure over 50% of the price consumer pays for Pantene goes in taxes. Believe me, I don't work for the shareholders of Procter & Gamble. I work for the state and central government of India, because they earn the most profits from the work I do. We pay import duty and sales tax on materials and equipment, excise duty on manufacturing costs, sales tax, turnover tax and octroi on finished goods. Not having full VAT system in place means that the state sales tax has cascading tax effect. Tax is paid on excise duty. Increasing tax rate of sales tax is a proof that liberalization had not touched the state level. In fact, I believe that liberalization is only in Delhi and has not touched the states at all. While the centers import and excise duties have gone down, the states have increased sales tax rates. Currently, in many products like toothpaste, states collect higher rate of sales tax than the center collects on excise duty. And the incidence is higher if you take into account that excise duty is paid on manufactured cost, less excise duty on materials, modvated, while sales tax is paid on trade price including excise duty. While center has reduced excise duty on toiletries from 110% to 40%, state excise duty applicable to toiletries containing alcohol, because alcohol comes under state control, as in aftershave lotions, continues at 110%. As for personal income tax, one leading chartered accountant was telling me, why are you grudging the marginal 40% tax rate on personal income tax? And I told him, and he said that virtually that's the same kind of tax rate we have in the Western countries. And I told him that may be true, but our marginal tax rate starts at $3,000, while in the West it starts at $300,000. That's the difference. Liberalization in service sector, as it affects multinational consumer products company, has been also very far-reaching. And here, I don't mean liberalization in banking and insurance sectors or in stock markets. For large multinational companies with deep pockets and high profitability like ours, the nationalized banks and insurance companies or controller of capital were never showstoppers, just minor pinpricks. What used to come in our way was the bureaucratic monopoly of Doordarshan for TV media, which we buy a lot, non-availability of world-class advertising and market research agencies in India, difficulty in communicating internally within India and externally with our parent company. The coming of satellite TV channels with liberalization has not broken Doordarshan's monopoly, but definitely has made them more customer-focused and given us more options in media buying, like what has happened to Indian Airlines after the private airlines came in. Getting Procter & Gamble's international advertising and research agencies affiliated with our local agencies has improved quality of advertising we do. As I mentioned earlier, the Coca-Cola ad, which Roberto Goizuta showed us as one of his favorite and the best advertising, which was made in India by McCann Erickson, was seen as one of the best Coke advertising. And McCann Erickson is a 100% foreign-owned advertising agency. And if you see the advertising, it looks very much Indian, made by a foreign-owned company. Our Vicks and Pantene advertising campaigns are now used by other Procter & Gamble markets. Earlier, it was one-way traffic. We were using most of advertising whose ideas had originated abroad. Importantly, the quality of consumer understanding we get through research and advertising we do via our international ad agencies is helping build our business strongly. On communication, VSNL has permitted us to have our own lines on which I can call up anyone in Procter & Gamble without going through MTNL or VSNL. In India, we have our factories, offices, depots and major trade customers, even in remote locations of India, linked up via voice and data on VSAT satellite systems. We get instantaneous information on our sales, inventories, and production from all locations without depending on still non-functioning telephone systems. This is helping us manage our and our customer inventories much better and improve our sales. Another area of liberalization which has helped us is in the removal of ceiling on remuneration and ease with which work permits for expatriates are granted. This has helped us in retaining senior managers and above all, get Procter & Gamble experts from abroad to come and work in India. Our company strongly believes that creativity and innovation comes from diversity of employees. Liberalization has helped us to get diversity among our employees. Now many Indian managers are working for Procter & Gamble abroad, while a lot of Procter & Gamble foreign expatriate managers are coming to India to teach and learn from us. I think I have covered all the points which I thought were relevant in the context of liberalization and multinationals. My point of view from the perspective of Indian manager of a multinational is that liberalization has been significant. It has helped the multinational company like ours to invest and grow business in India. However, the liberalization is nowhere near what the countries which are competing for foreign investment with India are offering. These countries, including communist China, are offering much more growth and profit potential to multinationals and in turn are reaping the economic benefits which the investments bring about. I hope I have met your expectation from the course point of view. We can discuss anything else you want in question and answer session if I have missed any point or connection. This is my personal plea that the only place I give talks outside my company environment is in college campuses, speaking to students, so I am absolutely raw as far as giving talk to such distinguished audience is concerned. In fact, if this is the auditorium, first speaker in this auditorium, the first time I'm speaking outside to outsiders, outside of the company or in the schools and colleges. But there has to be a first time. Today was it. I thank the National Institute of Advanced Studies for giving me the opportunity to present my views. Thank you once again. Well, I can take your comments or questions or answers you have. Well, I don't know too much of details of this. I know the top part of it. One is they permit foreign companies to come in fast. They don't take too much time in, you know, I mean, you see private roads being built in China. You see private infrastructures, power companies coming in very fast. From consumer product point of view, one of the things we found is that virtually there is no tax in China for new investments. They have very little what we call excise duties or sales tax. They permit new companies to come in with a lot of freedom on, I mean, virtually no income tax or very little income tax for last first 10 years. So there is a lot of benefits they give. Imports, a lot of imports of products are allowed. So that is from the Chinese liberalization perspective, and the Chinese market is also very big. That's another big attraction compared to an Indian market. Indian market is lot in terms of people, but believe me, it's small compared to China in terms of consumer product goods consumed as of today. Yes, you're right that majority 80% of the investment of 35 billion plus comes from overseas Chinese, but 20%, which is like $7 billion, does come from multinational companies, and I mean, that's a very valid reason that they should be investing more in India, because we never know what's going to happen to Chinese political system. And well, the issue is that investments are paying off very fast. There may be risk in that way, but when you start making first year money, then why should you worry about that? So from business perspective, it's a very, very productive market. It's a gestation period for new businesses are in fact, yes, that's true. In fact, again, this is very interesting. Maybe I'm diverging from what question you asked, because I also look after Bangladesh and Sri Lanka, and I go there and try to talk to the people. We just set up 100% subsidiaries of Procter & Gamble in Bangladesh and Sri Lanka. And one of the things about consumer product is the investment is not so much on plant and in machinery. In fact, one of the things which I go and talk to the Bangladesh government people, because we are setting up new projects there, that in a consumer product company, the process is, there is a, let's take a product like detergent. There's a chemical process which turns the linear, you know, LAB, LAS into detergent powder, and then we mix it with other important key ingredients. Then we pack it. Then we market, distribute, and the investment of plant and employment generated are totally inverse proportion in consumer products. The chemical process part of the plant is run by 4 to 6 people. While starting mixing and packaging, that's where the people start more. Then distribution, and then things like what we do, consumer sampling. I was trying to explain to the Bangladesh finance minister that we have 1,000 girls sampling the product, each girl earning 100 taka a day. There are 500 salespeople who are distributing the product. You know, that is where the employment is generated in consumer products. Consumer products employment is not generated in investment. Coming back to the China question is, yes, the investment is there in the plants, but it's not in proportion to the investment in advertising, for example. In consumer products, we spend as much money in advertising and marketing as we spend in capital equipment. You may be right in a way. I don't know what it means when you specifically talk about social area. Are you talking about charities or things like that, donations? I'm not able to pinpoint what you are getting at, because we do pay our taxes, we do pay, I mean, generate employment, but specifically the kind of mission, for example, the statement of purpose of our company would say that we would be a good employer, and we would be, you know, focusing and working with the communities we live in. Now, I specifically don't exactly what you have in mind. We have done it ourselves a lot. We just set up a new plant in Goa, and nearly, 80% of the people who are employed there are Goans. About 25-30% are from the villages where the plant is set up. We've had scholarships set in the schools around there. We have medical facilities, and we had some medical camps. So we tend to do as much as we can understand, which has value to the community we live in. But I think it's more impression than I think publicized. For example, there's a very good story when this whole our headquarters is Asian headquarters is in Japan, in Kobe, and the earthquake. Procter & Gamble was first there to not just look after the employees, but a lot of people around that area. And the Japanese government has given some kind of an award. I don't know the specific of it, but not just the money they paid, but the kind of support system they provided. A lot of people flew in from US, medical people, and they did a lot of things in that community. Talking about Bhopal, we set up our detergent factory in Mandideep, which is outside Bhopal, and our top management in Cincinnati didn't realize that was Bhopal. You know, they heard always Mandideep. So one day somebody mentioned, "What's happening in our Bhopal plant?" He said, "What? You have a plant in Bhopal?" I said, "Yeah, it's in Mandideep." And he said, "Oh my God." So, I mean, this is a side story, but you're right. I think we lack perhaps the kind of PR and image on this area. I don't think there is any lesson in terms of liberalization. I think the lesson we've learned is we should not go so fast. We should have waited for a little longer to understand the strengths and weaknesses as we have and as Godrej has, and to understand. I think we may have moved faster than maybe we were worried, that maybe liberalization window may be open and shut down, close or something. Let's move fast. But that is the liberalization related lesson. Unfortunately, that joint venture didn't work out well. One of the categories which we were I agree. I mean, well, in one category, the Godrej's strength was in one category only, which was toilet soaps. They were not very big in anything else, and therefore, yes, toilet soap is a major category in Indian consumer product market, and by disassociating ourselves from that category, from Godrej, we have weakened our trust in that toilet soaps. But then there are many more consumer product categories, as we see, and I think we will still do well. You'd be surprised that Procter & Gamble is strong in toilet soaps only in two countries in the world. Not in everywhere. US, yes, and in Philippines. The rest of the places, toilet soap is virtually not there. If you go to Europe, you will not see Procter & Gamble selling any toilet soap brands. You go to Far East, very little. So, they can still become very large. There are some other categories available.
Dr. Amana?
This was not my point of view. It was Roberto Goizueta of Coca-Cola, and I have no idea what problems they are facing in Germany, Coca-Cola. So I don't know, but we find always Germany and Japan are difficult countries. They are difficult in terms of they are very different. They are, I mean, two of them virtually fought the whole world and nearly won. So they must be very strong countries, and they don't easily adapt. I'm not talking more from regulations point of view, but don't adapt so easily. Consumers don't adapt to products which are, say, from outside as well as the local, Japan and Germany. So that could be one point of view which he may have. But I have no specific reason. I don't even know why he said India. Because it was in the stage he mentioned, but there was such a major statement in front of 200, 300 general managers of Procter & Gamble sitting there that we had to do a lot of damage control.
I interject. Possibly one reason is because Germans still prefer beer.
Could be.
Coca-Cola.
Could be. No, in India, in fact, they are back with a 100% subsidiary. I think they are facing more problems with their joint venture partner than they for problems with the government now.
Please.
I have no idea. I mean, it came with the colonies, I guess. Hindustan Lever came with their colonies. And believe me, Procter & Gamble, the only place outside of US they are much longer, has been Philippines, 60 years now. Just like Lever is 60 year old in India or more, they are 60 years old in Philippines, Mexico, maybe neighbors, UK, because US and UK always had good relations. But all over the world, not just India, they have been very new. Far East, except for Philippines and Japan, they didn't exist. In fact, in 85, when they took over Richardson Wicks, they got into these countries. Otherwise, they were not there. So, I guess they expand with the armies in the old days. I mean, I just said that we spend over $1 billion a year in R&D. And I don't know what technology means, really. In consumer products, believe me, the kind of molecules and kind of the enzymes and things which we go and discover for cleaning clothes or cleaning hair or tissues and towels or diapers or whatever we do, It's tremendous amount of technology in it. I guess the feeling is that consumer in India, the consumers don't count. I mean, consumer can have anything. Why should you have a toilet soap which is good quality? Why should you have a shampoo which is good? I mean, you can wash your hair anyway with washing soap. Why need a shampoo? Which is not a blind test winner against competition. Superior seen by consumers on blind test. That means our product is not identified, competition is not identified, we test it. Then only we would come and launch that kind of product. So, very difficult for me, because I have not worked in industrial or chemical companies, so I don't understand. But, I mean, the reason Procter & Gamble does well, in one of the myths of Procter & Gamble, is that it's a great marketing company. It's not true. It's a very high technology company. The tissue which Procter & Gamble has in US called Bounty absorbs beautifully all the things. It's not plain paper. It's kind of all kind of polymers in it, and things they do is fantastic. We have basic research centers which we do research from very, very, very basic. I mean, if you see, for example, Procter & Gamble, pardon? You know, this is very interesting, because the slogan you hear is, you know, we want computer chips, not potato chips. But believe me, we make potato chips, which is so high technology that computer chips cannot make it. We make fat-free Pringles potato chip. You know, we have an ingredient called olein, which you may have heard of, which is, you know, tastes like fat, but is not absorbed in the body. We make every single chip is same size, not a single one crushed. It's what consumers want. Consumers don't want crushed chips. They want, you know, full chips when they want to eat. Fat-free, the equipment which makes those potato chips cost close to $40-50 million. The potatoes are taken and mashed and, you know, formed in a one straight. So it's a very high technology product, according to us. And consumers pay for it, and it's one of the biggest thing happening right now is Pringles potato chips. I mean, all over the world, it's a big hot consumer item. Let me go back a little bit to explain what I was talking about Bangladesh. In fact, I didn't want to put manufacturing facility. I wanted to put a packing facility. I wanted, you see, to put up a bulk detergent facility or bulk shampoo making facility would be very, very expensive in compared to the market it has. So what I was asking them, that let us import the bulk powder, detergent powder, and let us do the packaging here. And but you don't charge us as a finished product duty kind of a thing, because, and I was trying to tell them, the manpower which is in the packaging part, labor which we will have, is much higher than what we would put a bulk detergent facility, and then so on in the marketing. So that was just to clarify that we were looking at packaging of bulk imported, packed locally, and thereby become a local manufacturer. But yes, we do have, in fact, we've been telling them about this, that, you know, Calcutta is closer to Dhaka than to Bombay. So, you know, if there was a kind of a SAFTA and kind of thing going on, we would be very keen to do this kind of a thing where we bring in the bulk, pack it locally. Because to set up a bulk manufacturing would be very, very difficult, because it's the size of equipment that stand. We make shampoo, standard size is 6-ton vessel. A 6-ton vessel would be like 1 month supply for Bangladesh. So we cannot make bulk shampoo in Bangladesh. What we need is bring the bulk, mix it, and then pack it locally.
Dr. Nasim?
In fact, this is a very good question. And what Procter & Gamble has done is they have made laboratories or the technical centers which are focused on certain categories. That means every country does not do all kind of research. They are focused on categories. For example, detergent is a focus in China for the whole region. India is healthcare. The healthcare laboratory or the healthcare technical center for the whole Asia region is in India, because we are the biggest in healthcare for Procter & Gamble in India, the Vicks line. And in fact, we are supplying for whole Asia Vicks VapoRub. It's made in India. Japan buys it, Australia buys it, everybody buys it. So the healthcare technical center for the whole region is in India, but not for detergent. So it's not every research, every ingredient done here. Center for healthcare is in India, and we have a basic research laboratory where we are doing fundamental research on healthcare, new ingredients, including the herbal ingredients. And also we are doing what we call product development. That means not basic ingredients, but the formulations, which, and you know, mix, making it, testing it, processes and all that. So both for healthcare, India is a center for whole Asia.
Shankar,
not very aware of it. I think more and more, because of this kind of environmental reasons, pressures from the animal groups, I think less and less of animal testing may have been done. But I am not very specifically aware whether Procter & Gamble is doing it or not doing it, or how much they are doing it. I am not specifically aware of it. I haven't seen issues coming up in press against Procter & Gamble. That's for sure.
But if I may just add to this question, because it raises the whole issue of the record of MNCs on environmental issues, which has been a hotly debated area. I think Procter & Gamble itself faced quite a lot of opposition on the tampers,
disposable
on diapers, the biodegradability of some of its paper products. How have you responded to these kind of...
Well, they have now come out with biodegradable plastic back sheets. There were a couple of areas where they were having problems. One was biodegradability of the plastic material used in disposable diapers. And the other was the pulp which was used, which had used chlorine bleach. And there was some effluent of chlorine coming out of places like Sweden where they were making that pulp. I think in both the areas, they have got out of it, that they have a breathable, biodegradable plastic bag sheet. I don't know how it breathes also, but that's the technology I'm talking about.
The last couple of questions.
Are you talking about the environment mark or ISI? There are two things. I think there's an environment mark. I think you're talking about environment mark. Our detergents do meet ISI standards, but the Indian Environment Ministry has come out with some kind of a mark, environment mark or eco label. And we don't believe in eco labels. We are totally against eco labels because we find that they will be misused against us on exports and things like that. And I personally believe that eco label is made is a big thing out of Germany to keep the products away. And one of the things, maybe, you know, the Hawaii Germany has difficulties of people doing business in Germany because they have this Blue Angel eco labels, and they force people to just like this carpets thing they do, child labor or something, and then keep away the carpets from India.
Sorry, we have time for just perhaps two more. So with your indulgence, I will give the floor to two people who have not yet asked questions. You will have an opportunity to talk to Mr. Patel over dinner if you're staying for dinner. So first you and then Lakshmi.
It's done. I know that the indirect taxes is the main reason the government gets, you know, between custom duty and excise duties, that's most of the government revenues. So I understand that. I'm just saying that there are other countries in the world also who have people to feed and look after, and I wonder why they don't need that kind of high taxation level as India needs. I'm not an expert on this. I mean, we're struggling with that. You'll be surprised. We'll see something very interesting in that. But you're right. One thing we've understood, and I'm sure you know, that rural people, their need is as good, I mean as much as urban people. They want clean clothes as much as urban people want clean clothes. They want to have cold rub when they have a cold as much as the urban people. And what we have found that by making the small sizes, for example, we make Vicks vapor rub in a 5-gram tin. Nowhere in the world you'll see a 5-gram tin. We sell over 80 million of them. Goes into villages, available in over 10 lakh outlets. Now that is where the villages are doing. Ariel, for example, it has a triple enzyme, very fancy, high-class detergent with all kind of thing. What we've done is made a pouch, a single dose. And it is going to the villages, and maybe at this stage, it's also very interesting, now that you got me into that, is that when a person uses a product which is perceived as cheap, like Nirma, they have to use about 60 gram of it, because the active ingredient in a product is very low. And then they have to rub a lot of bar and all that. And actual cost they spend per wash is not very dissimilar than what they have to do it with a small pouch of Ariel. Except that the perception is that I get a lot with so less. Because the mentality of a consumer, and this is the biggest issue we have, biggest problem in marketing we have. This Indian consumer is a kilo-minded consumer. They want more bigger things with less money. And it's happening in toilet soaps. And people who know that industry, toilet soaps today in India have very little fat content. They are filled up with lot of, you know, China clay and fillers. And the product is bulky, but it washes off very fast. A pure soap would last as, you know, cost per wash from a soap which is, say, high fat content would be same as a low fat content. But the consumer's mentality here is, I want more for less, and more is more weight. And compaction, totally opposite of China. China always goes, totally opposite of Japan, which is also Far East trade. Everything is compact. They want small to do more. Here we want less to get more. And it's a consumer issue. It's not a technological issue. It's a consumer mentality. Kilo, they buy everything kilo.
The last question.
Fantastic advertising is one of the best I've seen. It's a great, great, it's a work of art.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think the formal part of the evening we will now close. May I request Mr. Sri Ramakrishna to give the vote of thanks to our speaker.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to start assuring Mr. Bharat Patel that despite your apprehensions about this being your first talk outside your company and the college campuses, it was a very interesting and refreshingly positive talk on what has happened in India so far and how the MNCs, particularly your company, has responded to each one of the steps taken so far. It was surprisingly not a scathing attack on what has been done, nor was it a shopping list of more and more things that as a business community would like to have from the government. It was a very positive summing up of each one of the steps taken, be it FIRA or IDRA, and how your company has, and the business community has benefited from these steps. I am sure this will encourage the government and the policymakers to expedite the pace of reforms which we have seen slackening a little bit in the recent past. I am including the state governments also, which is a point, very valid point that you made in your talk. On behalf of the audience, I would like to express our very sincere thanks for this very refreshing and positive talk that you gave us, and the free and frank exchange of your viewpoint that you had with us during the question and answer session. Thank you very much, sir. I also would like to thank the NIAS for arranging this excellent session this evening, and for the very well conceived, very interesting course that you have organized for the participants here. Thank you.